So we will also have a presentation that will be broken into sections which will differ both by the person presenting and by the perspective. I will give a very brief, I'll try to be very brief introduction to the project and give over to Clint. So this is a project that is very much in the beginning. We've only started in January. It's a LABEX funded project, but also with a lot of support from the DIM, Île-de-France, and from the CNRS and from our lab, and involves people from quite a different perspective, disciplines, practices, and so forth, all trying coming together to think of how one can use and work with joint improvisation. He meant as collective improvisation, more than one person, rather than articulate. We've just had lots of joints, so it's not the same joint. And how that can be used both as a tool for research and eventually as an intervention pedagogical tool. So I'll give a quick background that might be totally unnecessary, but anyway, I'll give it. To some work we've done before, actually, looking at the relationship, and I think it's relevant here because we have kind of, I think many of the talks here are kind of going between question of meaning, as I already mentioned before, language. We're just seeing like, you know, so sign language, but also dance, what is the meaning, you know, in game, etc. And so I think just interesting to show this work we've done using fMRI. So based originally on a language fMRI study, which kind of compared fully formed sentences to basically word salad and things in the middle, and kind of identified regions of the brain that were caring about structure. So you can see the examples here. So if you have on the top is just a normal, let's say, kind of a longish sentence of English. All the way on the bottom are just sequences of words that cannot be put together to any kind of coherent sentence of English. Think, very, tree, where, of, watching, copy, tense, day, states. Maybe it's more interesting than the sentence above, but it is considered a word salad. And indeed, these researchers in my former lab, they found a number of regions. We won't go into too much detail. If you know anything about brain and language, those are very classical brain language areas, and they seem to be in the left side, Broca's areas, Wernicke, temporal lobe, etc. And those regions seem to be particularly sensitive to increase in coherence. And so we basically did the same thing in dance. So I'll show you right, I'll go right away to the dance. So skip the music. So these are the stimuli we created. So people were watching that in the scanner. With the gaps, exactly. This is exactly what they were watching. This is one condition. Now we'll see a different level of coherence. You might observe the difference between the one we just seen before. Both include gaps, but there's less coherence. Oh, in fact, this is our least coherent condition. And there is an intermediate dance, an intermediate choreography, which is kind of somewhere in the middle with respect to its coherence. It was done in an incredibly crude way, simply taking a dance and chopping it up. And dancers are able to tell us, when we're watching this, this is not in the scanner, outside the scanner, telling us which is more or less coherent. So people are good at detecting, at least dancers are good at detecting that. So this is, we know at least that they are aware of, you know, they are able to read the coherence in, or the lack of coherence in the stimuli. And what we find these regions in the brain. I won't go into detail. This is whole brain analysis, and particularly two regions, one in parietal cortex, people are interested, probably related to the notion of kinesthesia and kinesthetic empathy. This is our interpretation, but it's an interpretation. And in front, this is the big blob on the right there in the middle. This is medial prefrontal cortex, usually associated with theory of mind, understanding other people, understanding intentions, and so forth. Those regions were more active. It was always the same movement. Those regions were more active when the movements came together as coherent. Okay, so we have this notion that both something about our understanding at the level of kinesthesia and of the level of understanding the other as a person, both are becoming, these regions become more active when there's a more coherent dance. The second, and probably more relevant for today, is that we looked in a region of interest analysis, we looked at the regions from the language study. So regions that in the language study showed increase in activity, and indeed within the six regions of this language study, we found three that were also responding to dance. So we have regions, and the interesting thing with those three regions, which also they also responded, I went by that very quickly, to a very similar manipulation in music, and also at a condition in the language stimuli that you might have if you were fast, you saw before, it was called Jabberwocky, in which all the meaningful words were in place, and so it was just structure without meaning in some way. And so it seems that there are certain base neuronal structures, tissues, whatever, I mean, it's very hard from fMRI to understand exactly what you're looking at, networks, areas that seem to kind of, independently of the medium, meaning music, dance, language, seem to care about something like coherence, of like making sense, of coming together in some structural level. And so this is kind of open, I think, a really interesting, I think this is a really interesting in itself a finding, and kind of opens up a lot of questions and joins questions that have already been asked by people in the field for a long time. And it goes to Valeria's talk, etc., which is what is the kind of, how do we think of structure and meaning in something like that? So now we are at the next step, or in a sense, which is, can we look at the emergence of structure or meaning during improvisation? So this meaning, so the emergence, during, and improvisation, those three things that we did not see before, that was fMRI of choreographed structures, and it was kind of done in a really non-ecological way. And so the new project that you will be hearing about today is trying to look at things from an ecological perspective, working bottom-up in a studio with scientists, with dancers, with philosophers, engineers, to try to understand meaning-making in that way that seems to be human and common to seemingly many different kind of human activities, how that actually kind of happens in real life, going back to some of the issues, trying to find an intermediate space, an heterotopic space that is not totally, you know, outside in the street, but also not in a lab all alone in a small room. So we're in a dance studio, sometimes wearing funny things on ourselves. I should have put the photo from Mathieu, but I didn't. We look sometimes very funny where we dress, but you know, with all the sensors, try to use, again, improvisation as the, and joint improvisation as a tool to study, as a context to study these kind of questions. So I think some of the things will kind of resonate with respect to the morning, the idea of to combine multiple perspectives and level of explanation, first, second, and third. Development, so we are working with the Conservatoire of Art Dramatique eventually to work with their students, that is our hope. And as I said, it's a very multidisciplinary project. I made this slide. I hope I won't get hit by anyone from for the project. I tried to kind of put three poles and pick people somewhere in the middle along the three, kind of in this multidimensional space. I didn't want to put like, oh, those are the scientists, those are the dancers, other, you know, because I think it doesn't work like that. We all, and I should have asked everyone to come and put themselves where they want to be, but we don't have the time. Just to show that it's a mixed perspective and very interesting to work together to try to put things. The major themes that came up from the work, qualities of attention, turn-taking issue that have only been raised, beyond mirroring and synchronization, so what are ways of being together which are not just synchronization or mirroring. This is again relates to some of the issues that were mentioned and that we mentioned in the rest of the 2 days. The emergence of the collective, meaning the together, this togetherness, and temporal dynamics and transitions, again, going back to some of the things that Ronald talked about, et cetera, like the moments in between when change happens. And I will stop here and I will let, so we will kind of present different perspectives throughout our session, and I'll let Clint start. You want to start? Mm-hmm.
Clint, will start. I'm Clint Lutz. I'm a dancer and choreographer and other things associated with dance. I appreciate that you put me in between dance and science because I'm really not at all a scientist. But for the last year and a half, I've been working a lot with Parkinson's research in association with dance. So before we go any further, I figured since it's a conference about gesture, and no one's actually moving, we're gonna move. So choose a partner. You can stay seated wherever you are. Just find a partner, can be across the room or whatever. You can stand up, you can sit, it's up to you. So this is an exercise based on mirroring that we've been working with, that I've also, that is also effective in Parkinson's research, and I'm also going further with in other ways. So one finger, and you're gonna mirror your partner's finger. So allow the movement to emerge. No one is leading, no one is following. You follow the movement. Go. Without talking.
We're not trained.
Now continue. Look at your partner's eyes. And now you mirror the entire body of your partner, still allowing the movement to emerge. Always looking in your partner's eyes. No one is leading, no one is following. And now grab an object, any object, the first object you see, you find. And now you're going to put your focus, your gaze on your partner's object, and you're going to mirror the objects. One object mirrors the other object. And I'm going to let you continue with that as I talk about other things. Try to continue and looking at your partner's object and listening at the same time. So often in Parkinson's research or in Dance for Parkinson's work, doing mirroring exercises allows the person with Parkinson's to do movements that they don't trust themselves to do or that they can't do alone. Which brings up interesting conflicts and interactions and the simple ability for them to do other things is really exciting for everyone involved. In this project of ICI, I'm interested in these conflicts and these interactions, but also how we view and how we experience a live thing, a live performance, a live interaction, and how to inform the person that's watching. So in terms of a creative development, I'm going forward with these. You're still mirroring. You're doing a great job, by the way. I'm interested in these different levels of how we see ourselves and understand each other and understand our own. So for example, this idea can go further, that we take away the object and we still imagine we're holding it and still mirror the object of the other person, but we don't have the object. Or we put the energy or the texture of this object into our own bodies and develop that further. So how this embodiment affects us differently. And in the end, how this information in our body informs our mind and how our mind informs our body and the movements and all of that. So I'll let you stop now. You can thank your partner for this dance.
So it's my turn. I know you're excited about what you just did, but so I'm on this side next to the philosophy part, which means that I'm teaching philosophy as a profession. And one of the things that we tend to do in philosophy is trying to explain the origin of our own ideas, not in terms of an empirical point of view, but in terms of ideologies. And so I wanted to try and frame my own ideas and maybe some of our common ideology about what is emergent, how to conceive improvisation as an emergent structure rather than as a set material. And so I'll try to situate this in a broader ontology. An ontology is just a theory of being, what are beings. So they could be living beings, they could be dead matter, which is the common ideology that we have. They could also be spirits. That's an ontology. So to reach that ontology, I will just try and recap what we understand when we say our improvisation is emergent. The first thing is that we understand that the meaning of the improvisation or the gestures done in the improvisation are intrinsic to the act and not external to it. That's one way of envisaging emergence in that case. That means that although there is a pre-existing rule, so mirror the finger of your partner, what is of interest to us is not specifically the way we comply to the rule, but the way we invent rules within it. So it's the production or the emergence of rules within a broader rule that is of interest to us when we say that improvisation is emergent. This idea, this emergentist logic can be applied to gestures, and that's what I'm going to try to do. So looking at a smaller picture, just a movement by one person or by a person towards someone else. To say that a gesture is emergent could be defined negatively twice. It could be meaning once that gestures are not to be considered as expressing a pre-individual substance. That's fairly simple. Since the beginning of the 20th century, most theories of psychology have been stating that you're not angry and then you make gestures of anger. Your anger is in the gesture of anger. There's no difference between the two. So there's no pre-existing substance that would be expressing itself in the gesture. The gesture is producing the substance itself. So that's the first one. The gesture is emergent in that sense. It's not expressing something that would exist before it. The second sense is, the second meaning towards which we can look at gesture as emergent is the idea that gestures are not partes extra partes movements. Partes extra partes is a Cartesian way of saying parts being exterior to each other. That just means that my hand, for instance, would be independent of my elbow and my shoulder. So partes extra partes, the parts are exterior to each other. That would also mean, if I envisage a gesture partes extra partes, that my hand is independent from Asaf. While in the idea of a gesture, the idea is to consider that my gesture is at the same time here and in Asaf, or concerning Asaf. So my gestures are always more than what they are, or more than one. They exist at least twice or thrice or a multiple number of times. They're not exterior to each other, they co-implicate each other. So those are the, let's say, the two ways of looking at a gesture, a human movement, through the perspective or emergentism. I shouldn't have chosen that word. Anyway, this two way of looking at it, they are, so I repeat, the producing individual rather than supposing their existence and not being partes extra partes, existing more than once. Those two ideas belong to a very general, much more general framework that I would call an ontology of becoming, which is quite proper to the 20th century. This ontology considers quite simply that subjects, and more generally the forms of experience, meaning space or time, are not a frame for movement, but that movement are generating them. So there's two ways of considering movement. Either I consider that there's this room, and then I enter into this room, and the room is not changed by the fact that I entered into it. Or I consider that I'm producing the space by entering into it. It's just two very different ways of looking at it. The ontology of becoming will look at the second aspect of reality. Now, the reason why this the reason why this ontology of becoming has received renewed interest in the beginning of the 20th century is as a reaction to another reigning ontology, which has installed itself in the Western civilization since the Renaissance, and this ontology is what I will call a flat ontology. So becoming ontology and flat ontology. In ancient Greece and in the Middle Ages, the ontology was based on the idea that being was to be said in multiple ways. So you could exist in many different ways.